Well, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Good to see you this afternoon. We have actually three cases set for oral argument, two on the 1:30 panel and another one on our 3 o'clock panel. We'll go ahead and get started if the attorneys are ready. And I'll ask Bonnie to call the case, the first case.
The court will now call Wendy Kweitzer versus Scott E. Kasten, M.D. and Scott E. Kasten, M.A.P.A. Statements of the court, Mr. William J. Dunleavy will argue for the appellant. Mr. Edward P. Quinlan will argue for the appellate.
Okay. Mr. Dunleavy, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor, I am. May it please the court.
Counsel.
Kind of deja vu all over again. I was here back in September of 2012, same judges on the panel, same opposing counsel, and frankly, quite a lot of the same arguments. In this appeal, the second appeal, we raised 6 issues, but as I'm going to explain to the court, it's really 2 main arguments. Wendy Kweitzer says that a patient can sue a doctor even if there's an absence of negligence for breach of contract. Wendy Kweitzer also says if we can't sue for breach of contract in the absence of negligence under Chapter 74, then that is a violation of the Constitution, the open courts provision, and it's a denial of equal protection under law because doctors are allowed to sue patients if they don't get paid. Dr. Kasten says Chapter 74 doesn't allow contract claims against doctors. No contract claims are allowed in the absence of negligence or a breach of the standard of care, which is negligence. It's harmless error what the trial court did because we would ask the same questions on a contract claim that we asked the jury in the first trial on a negligence case, and that there's no evidence of a contract or a duty or a breach, or not a duty, excuse me, no evidence of a contract breach damages. Really, this case calls for a do-over, and that's what I'm doing today, and I was able to listen to the argument yesterday that I made 21 months ago, and it reminds me of, I don't know who the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, who said, in any case he argued, there was always 3 arguments. The one he planned to make, the one he made, and more importantly, the one he should have made. So today I get to make some of the arguments I should have made. I get to answer some of the questions I should have answered or answered better, and that's what I'm going to do. The 6 issues, though, are Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code Chapter 74 does not contain any prohibition on contract claims against healthcare providers. It also doesn't contain any requirement that limits healthcare claims to claims of negligence, or that you have to prove that the doctor or healthcare provider failed to perform negligently, or his failure was negligence. We didn't recast a healthcare liability claim. This court already said we didn't recast a healthcare liability claim. There's no Supreme Court precedent that says we can't sue for breach of contract. And if this court determines that you cannot sue a doctor for breach of contract, or you cannot sue a doctor for breach of contract in the absence of negligence in the performance of the contract, that's an open courts violation. It's a violation of equal protection of law. As I said before, there's another way to frame the important question. Can patients sue doctors or healthcare providers for refunds? I'll add this, even when the doctor was not negligent. And the answer is clearly yes, because Chapter 74 doesn't bar those claims, and it contains no requirement to prove negligence, although Dr. Kasten makes that argument, and the trial court found that Wendy Kweitzer was recasting claims. Didn't find that we were recasting claims to avoid the requirements of Chapter 74, which is what all the cases say is the big no-no. We complied with Chapter 74, and this court has already said so, and the trial court twice already said so. So what were the questions that I didn't answer on the first appeal? Well, I think both Justice Gardner and Justice Meyer, you both asked, how would the jury questions differ in a contract case? And what I tried to say then, and I hopefully will do a better job today, is I'm going to rely on the pattern jury charges, which are going to say, is there a contract? Did the doctor perform? It's not going to say, did the doctor negligently fail to perform? Was there negligence in his performance? It's going to say, did he breach the contract? Did the breach cause Wendy Kreitzer damages? Those are the contract questions. So how is that different than negligence? Well, the jury was asked and answered negatively, did the negligent conduct of the defendants proximately cause the plaintiff's damages? They said no. That is a different question than a contract case. Justice Meyer also asked, referencing paragraph 5, Roman numeral 5, and it's in the third amended petition at the record, one clerk's record 40, some of the allegations about fail to provide appropriate care, fail to provide proper care. Gee, that sounds like negligence. And what I responded was, if we got a chance to do a special exception, which this court gave us, I would replead. And that's what I did. So now, while those three allegations are still in the petition, and Justice Meyer suggested those would require an expert at trial, maybe they would, but whether or not Dr. Kasdan performed does not require an expert. My client is able to testify she did not get the informed consent for a silicone breast implant. The paperwork that's in the record, and I didn't get the site, but it's for a saline breast implant. And we presented on the summary judgment in Wendy Kreitzer's affidavit what the informed consent is for a silicone implant, which we never got in discovery. We discovered it during trial. So she can say, I didn't get that. And in fact, she would say, I suspect, that if she got it, she wouldn't have the surgery. He didn't provide for post-operative, he didn't provide any treatment for post-operative infections. We know that, and we can conclusively prove it because he said there was no infection. I didn't treat one. His expert finally at trial admitted, yeah, there was a subclinical infection. And ultimately, what this contract is about, bilateral breast implants, two. My client left his care with one. So our position is a negative answer to negligence in the first trial does not preclude a recovery on a contract claim. Justice McCoy asked about the definition. And I stumbled around trying to explain disjunctives, and grammar rules were never my strong suit, but he talked about other claim departures from accepted standards. So what I would say today is those words modify the words medical care, health care, safety, professional services, and administrative services. The whole ball of wax, as Justice Meyer said. So if that's the definition, how do you bring this claim? Well, because the definition, as I told Justice McCoy last time, also includes treatment and, more importantly, lack of treatment. Now, Justice McCoy might tell me today that lack of treatment means a departure from an accepted standard of care, because that's why the or is there. And what I would say to the court is, then you look at the legislative intent because it's vague. And the reason it's vague is because, as several courts, one 3 weeks before we were here last time, the Loesiga opinion said there's a rebuttable presumption that any claim against a healthcare provider during the course of treatment is a healthcare liability claim. And I'm going to get to the mole that Justice McCoy talked about on his face in a moment, but Mr. Quillen told the court that, well, you know, if a doctor doesn't take off the mole and there's no medical reason, you can sue, and it's not a Chapter 74 claim. And I said, yes, it is a 74 claim. And if I brought that claim without a report, without an expert, we wouldn't have a medical malpractice case. We would have a legal malpractice case because I would know that's a healthcare liability claim. The trial court would, and if I didn't file a report, they'd dismiss it, and this court would affirm that dismissal. Well, the legislature grabbed all kinds of claims, as Justice Meyer said, the whole ball of wax. The Supreme Court has made that abundantly clear in the Omaha healthcare case. Justice Lehrman, in a dissent, said, you should just say everything is a healthcare liability claim, and then a year later, case that escapes my name, my thoughts, they did say it's a rebuttable Loesiga case. So everything's a healthcare liability claim, just as I argued the last time. And the legislature intended everything to be included. So what about the mole that doesn't get removed? No negligence. It's actually a good decision by the doctor. He had a bad night last night. Maybe his wife had a baby. Maybe he delivered the baby. So it wouldn't be a good decision to do the surgery the next morning. But he's not going to give the money back because his wife just had a new baby or whatever the reason is. And so what's your claim? There's no negligence there. He just didn't do what he said he would do. There's no breach of any standard of care. Maybe on an expert report, a doctor would say, if you contract to do something, you've got to do it or give the money back. Maybe that's the standard of care to get over the expert report hurdle. But when we get to trial, whether the doctor removed the mole or didn't remove the mole doesn't require expert testimony. And the court and all of the decisions of the Supreme Court talk about the report being a threshold requirement. You might not necessarily need that evidence at trial.
Suppose the doctor does perform some part of his service but omits some other part. Could that be a breach of contract as opposed to negligence?
I believe so, Your Honor, and I don't think doctors get any special, once you get past the requirements of Chapter 74, they're just like everybody else. And it's really expensive to get past Chapter 74 and to potentially get past two appeals before you get to go to trial on your contract case, and probably you're not going to do that in most cases. But as I said the last time, this was a negligence case. The jury has spoken. And now we're looking at, we want the money back that we paid for something we didn't get. So you buy two tires for your motorcycle, and one fails, not through any failure of the guy who sold it to you. It just fails for whatever reason, and it shouldn't, and it's not due to you. And you go back to get a new tire or to get it replaced, a manufacturing defect maybe. He says, well, yeah, I'll sell you another one. Well, wait a second. I bought two, and one of them was defective. One of them failed. Well, you need to buy another one. No, I want to get what I paid for the first time. It's a breach of contract claim. So you can sue for that even if it's a doctor you're suing, provided you get through all of the burdensome requirements of Chapter 74, which, as has been repeatedly stated in this case, we did. And I'll give the court another example.
But let's
old standard
back up for just a second. I guess I'm not remembering the mole example.
Your Honor,
but
let me
if
then
he doesn't perform any surgery on the mole, there's no injury or death of a claimant. Hence, it's not a health care liability claim.
Yes, there is, Your Honor, because in a case I mumbled and fumbled with last time, Walrath versus Victoria Gardens out of the Dallas Court of Appeals, that court said that if you're just suing for money damages, and the example you gave, Your Honor, was I have a mole, I paid you $5,000 to remove it, I wake up, I still have the mole, and you have my money,
right?
And you won't give it back. And Mr. Quillen argued there's no injury. Well, the Walrath court said injury includes monetary damages. And that's the law in Texas now. It was,
or at least over there.
Well, the Supreme Court denied any review of that. So
okay.
So the injury is economic damages. What should this court do with the definition, the statutory construction? If you say treatment and lack of treatment have a negligence element appended to them, then you can't sue for that mole removal that didn't happen. You can't get the refund. You have the gold-plated nursing home, $50,000 a month, gold faucets and bedpans and crystal chandeliers and meals provided by Riata. That's what you bargain for. That's what you pay for. But what you get is the $5,000 a month Medicare treatment, perfectly acceptable, no breach of the standard of care, but you didn't get what you bargained for. So if you, and that's a lack of treatment. They didn't give me what I wanted. Are the sheets part of healthcare? Well, a broken bed is. spiders are. So it's all health care, and if you don't get what you bargained for, even in the absence of negligence, you can sue. And we ask the court to interpret the definition that way, broadly, expansively, to include the whole ball of wax, as the Supreme Court has said, as the legislature said, and to use Justice Meyer's example. It grabs everything that's out there. And I can rebut that a claim is a healthcare claim in some circumstances. We're not doing that here. This claim is related to the conduct of Dr. Kasdan while Wendy Kreitzer was his patient, and it is a healthcare liability claim. We complied with the statute. We want to go forward and be able to make our claim under contract law and ask the contract questions that don't involve was Dr. Kasdan negligent in his failure to provide care, but simply ask, did he perform? And if the jury answers no, he didn't perform, I'm done.
Then you can finish your sentence.
Go ahead, finish.
If the doctor didn't perform, even in the absence of negligence, we're entitled to present that and ask for a recovery from a jury.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dunleavy. Where's my sheet? Counsel for Appellate, please.
Good afternoon. Ms. Kreitzer's claims are really, at its essence, a term that used by several of the courts, a negligence claim. At its essence, the way it's pled, the manner in which it's pled, the allegations therein, it's a negligence claim, not a breach of contract claim.
If he had prevailed at trial, would he have been able to recover as an element of damages the monies that he had paid for the negligently performed procedure?
Justice McCoy, I do not believe so.
Well, doesn't that kind of raise a concern that here is an element of damage, which if he is correct, he would not be able to recover, even though clearly it's a damage?
The charge in the negligence claim case would be, first, the questions.
Standard of care, I understand.
Second is what sum of money, if now paid in cash, would fairly compensate the plaintiff. Now, if you pay $5,000 to have a gallbladder removed and the surgeon just botches the procedure and it's a horrible complication, you know, under his theory, he didn't have the benefit of the contract under his theory, but as a measure of damage might include the cost of the surgery, but it's not a reimbursement of the cost of surgery.
Well, suppose, as I recall, I used to have a case occasionally where someone would operate on the wrong limb. You basically had a contract to fix the bunion on my right foot, and in fact you did something on my left foot, hence you paid for something you didn't get. But you don't think that he would be able to get his money back?
Well, that could be an element of his other damages, including future expenses, et cetera. But you're not reimbursed the price of the surgery. So the reimbursement would be a breach of contract type theory, but in the negligence aspect, that same compensation is taken care of as an element of their damage, past medical expenses, future medical expenses.
Well, the big picture bottom line question from your standpoint is there is no breach of contract in a medical malpractice case, period.
That's a little too strong. That's too strong.
Okay.
And as I reflected on this argument last time in the briefs, as Mr. Dunleavy did, I would phrase it not quite as strong as that, Justice
right.
McCoy. The whether in tort or contract ending of the definition of healthcare liability claim, what that is saying in case law has interpreted it is says it doesn't matter if it's a healthcare liability claim as the definition provides, healthcare, then it doesn't matter whether you bring the action in tort or if you try to call it a contract. It doesn't matter whether it's contract or tort. It has to follow Chapter 74. It has to follow the framework of Chapter 74. And not only with the expert report, the Murphy case says that the claimant cannot escape the legislative statutory scheme by artful pleading. And then the Victoria Gardens case says that you can't evade the healthcare liability claim label by simply selecting a contract-based theory of damages. And so Chapter 74 framework is more than just an expert report. It has requirements of limitation of damages. It has, statute of limitations aspects to it, that a breach of contract claim is different. A pure breach of contract claim under Chapter 38, you don't have necessary limitations on damages. You have a different statute of limitations. And so you can't circumvent Chapter 74 by calling something, by bringing a breach of contract, satisfying an expert report requirement, then bringing a breach of contract, all the elements of damages, statute of limitations, all the other rules of contract into Chapter 74.
Including recovery of attorney's fees, which I assume is really what we're talking about here.
Perhaps, Your Honor. Did I answer your question? Okay.
Sir, would you point out for me where in the provisions of Chapter 74 that the legislature clearly announced its intention to restructure contract law and to include breach of contract as been longstanding in Texas tradition and Texas law, and to require instead that a breach of contract claim should have to fit only within the provisions of Chapter 74?
I don't know about the I don't see an intent where the legislature framed the issue of wanting contract law to, well, wanting circumvention of Chapter 74 by simply calling a breach of contract, satisfying an expert report requirement, and then all of a sudden Chapter 38.
Well, that's an excellent re-juxtaposition of what I ask you. When the legislature was looking at Chapter 74 language in the statutes that they debated and they passed, they didn't put anything in the statute that I could find or that I've seen that says we intend to throw out contract law as it's existed in the state of Texas up to this point, and instead we're going to put your contract case in the framework of a 74, and that's going to mean you've got to prove variation and deviation from standard medical care, accepted medical care, in order to prove a breach of contract claim.
If I understand just your question, my answer would be that at the beginning of the statute, there's a statement saying that if there's any conflict of any other provision or any other law, this shall govern. I haven't seen it pronounced by a legislature of how that applies to a Chapter 38 case, but my reading of that is that if there's a conflict between this statute and any other statute, this one governs.
Well, in terms of it goes, does it go in the sense of the procedural approach to the framing of the lawsuit, in the sense that when you sue as a claimant, a person who's been receiving medical care against a health care provider, that you must then start out your litigation with the framework within the framework of Chapter 74 and give me an expert report within 120 days. But if you do that, then you're still into the application of the general rules of contract in terms of the proof of your case.
It is true that the case law says once the expert report is satisfactory, you don't necessarily have to have expert testimony at trial to prevail. So in that angle, the expert report requirement is a threshold. However, I don't see where the legislator said abolishes other causes of action.
All right. Thank you, sir.
How do the facts alleged, or maybe I should direct this to plaintiff's counsel, but how do the facts alleged for breach of contract differ from those that were alleged for negligence? In this case?
The record.
Or do they?
On page 40 of the record, of the clerk's record, it contains the elements of the alleged breach of contract. And I believe there were perhaps six of those. Each of those t- talks about properly, you know, didn't properly do this, didn't properly do that. And the word properly then, of course, is subject to opinion, subject to, and needs expert testimony in and of itself, because a common layperson would not necessarily know whether properly the surgery was done properly, the infection, the post-operative care was done properly. Because it lends itself to have expert testimony, it that phrase that frames it back where it's a health care liability claim that require an expert. So the expert testimony is needed, expert testimony was provided, and expert testimony was ultimately decided, or the jury decided against the plaintiff and his expert testimony.
Well, what about the failure the failure to give her any materials on the type of implant she was going to receive as being a breach of contract? He didn't do it. He didn't give her the materials.
If the claim is if the claim or omission complaint, or the claim, if the claim is complaining of an act that's an inseparable part of the rendition of medical services. This is the Rose case and also the Rashandan case. If it's an inseparable part of the rendition of medical services, then you're talking about departure from accepted standards of care. So you have to look at the underlying, the essence of the act complained of. You know, is an assault healthcare liability claim? Well, you have to first determine, was the assault or the act that caused the assault, was an inseparable part of the rendition of medical services? That's the first analysis. And if so, then it would be governed under Chapter 74. If not, it might not be. I don't know, did that answer your question, Justice?
Well, it kind of did, but I guess that doesn't, to my ears, reach the issue of, okay, but could it still be a breach of contract?
It.
And does the Medical Liability Act foreclose that, or whatever you call that act? And here's something I just ran across that I don't think I'd ever seen before. In Chapter 74.101, Theory of Recovery, on failure to disclose or adequately disclose risks and hazards, which sounds to me like that would encompass failure to give her the materials that would cover her, explain the risks of her type of procedure, saline versus
silicone.
It says in such a suit, in a suit involving healthcare liability claim based on failure to disclose risks and hazards, I'm summarizing this, the only theory on which recovery may be obtained is that of negligence in failing to disclose the risks or hazards. That would seem to me to answer the question regarding that particular factual claim, and I guess that might be one thing we're looking for in the rest of the act with regard to other allegations of breach of contract.
I'm familiar with that specific provision, and I don't know that there's other specific provisions in Chapter 74 that would address all the various acts or violations that are alleged. I still believe you look at the, with the exception of anything else specifically addressed, that you look at the act complained of and whether or not it's an inseparable part of the rendition of medical services in order to determine whether or not it's a healthcare liability claim.
Well, was there testimony that was failure below the standard of care to give the incorrect disclosure or?
As I recall, Justice McCoy, this issue about the incorrect came up during trial. And I believe Judge Curry did not allow that fully into evidence. There was a limitation on that. So, and I don't recall exactly.
Well, I assumed it was your position that if the jury found it was not below the standard of care to fail to give the correct disclosure, then it couldn't be a breach of contract. Because it was a breach of contract, he failed to give it, it was below the standard of care, assuming there's expert testimony on that. Isn't that kind of your position? I mean, one of your positions is you can't fail to be negligent and yet breach a contract, correct?
But if the accusations deal with, is an accusation that requires expert testimony.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Which, if this is a health care liability claim, it will.
Yeah, if, yeah. If
and the, it is a health care liability claim because, actually, the way I think you should read this is where you should put whether the claimant's claim or cause of action sounds in tort or contract at the beginning of the paragraph, and then you read the rest of it. And there's no dispute it's a health care liability claim. He's not disputing that, as I understand it, right?
Correct. In this case, there's no
dispute. Hence, we need an expert report, right?
You do, yeah, you need an expert report. Yes, sir, Your Honor.
But he had it. Correct?
He had an expert report. Yes, yes, ma'am.
He complied with the Health Care Liability Act, so that's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Sorry.
Oh, that's quiet, Your Honor. The last thing I'll say before concluding is if we want to go down the alley of a breach of contract, then is it an enforceable contract? I don't think analysis is necessary because of things we talked about, but statute of frauds would be an issue because of writing for medical services has to be in writing signed by a physician. I'm out of time unless there's
any more questions. I guess not. Thank you, Mr. Quillen. Mr. Dunleavy, rebuttal.
I think I do have some brief rebuttal, Your Honor. May it please the court. We don't dispute it's a health care liability claim. We complied with all of the burdensome requirements, which include giving notice, providing the expert report. We were subject to a limitation on damages. We filed the breach of contract claim not only within 4 years, but within 2 years. So we complied with all of the requirements, and that's, as far as I know, never been in dispute. Both trial judges, and I think this panel on its previous opinion, said we complied with the requirements or we wouldn't have got this far. So it's just not a dispute. Now, the argument is, well, Chapter 74 doesn't have any allowance for attorney's fees. It also doesn't say that non-subscriber claims are covered by Chapter 74. But the Supreme Court just said in the West Oak Hospital case that an employee who's an employee of a non-subscribing healthcare provider who sues his employer, that that's a healthcare liability claim. So, again, going back to Justice Meyer's language, you got the whole ball of wax, you got everything. And to respond once again to Justice McCoy, however you write the definition, there is the possibility something will get left out. The way the definition is right now, if we interpret it the way I think, Justice McCoy, you said it should be interpreted, that or other departure from a standard of care, if that's referring to treatment, the first word in the definition, lack of treatment, the next phrase in the definition, to be departures from a standard of care, then that imposes on all healthcare liability claims that the plaintiff must prove negligence. That's not the intended result of the statute. The intended result of the statute, as Justice Meyer says, is to bring everything in to make you pass the threshold, but nowhere in the statute does it say we're going to change all of contract law. And if the legislative intent is to change all of contract law and to bar claims against doctors for breach of contract, or to bar claims against doctors for breach of contract unless the plaintiff can prove negligence, then that is a denial of a long-standing common law claim and is a denial of my client's open court's rights to go to court and sue for a refund when the doctor doesn't perform the contract. Mr. Quillen also said that all of the language at 1 Clerk's Record 40 talks about appropriate and proper. That is not true. There are three separate references. Failed to provide a bilateral breast augmentation. Not that he negligently failed to do it. He simply didn't do it. Failed to provide post-surgery treatment for infection. Not that he negligently failed to do it. He just didn't do it. So Those are not negligence claims. They're contract claims. And if you say you got to prove negligence, that he negligently failed it, then you're denying my client access to the courts. And no other appeals court that I have found has made that interpretation of the statute. The Supreme Court has not interpreted the statute that way. So you can say we got to prove negligence, or you can consider the entirety of the definition, the legislative intent, and say the legislature intended to include everything, and we're going to let patients sue doctors when the doctor doesn't do what he says he's going to do, even if the doctor's failure was not negligent. If the doctor fails to remove the mole on someone's cheek, and it's a perfectly good decision, and he won't give the money back, the patient should be able to sue for that.
Well, let's just say the doctor realizes there's sepsis and fails to treat it. Okay, well, obviously, in a regular case, you would say it is below the standard of, you'd have an expert that would say it's below the standard of care to recognize sepsis as present and failure to treat it. You would say, well, I don't need an expert because this isn't negligence. He just failed to do it. And I mean, that's what you just said a minute ago. We're just saying that he failed to do what he said he would do. Okay, I come in, doctor, I think I have sepsis. Yes, you do, and I don't treat it. No negligence, just breach of contract, no expert report needed. I'm struggling with that.
Your Honor, I think everything needs an expert report. That's why we did an expert report. But we do think once you get past that threshold, there can be claims where you don't need the expert, you don't need somebody to say he breached a standard of care. And the sepsis example.
I didn't do what I said I'd do. It's breach of contract. I don't need expert testimony at trial to say it was below the standard of care.
No, Your Honor, we all, if I may,
okay, go ahead, go ahead.
We always need expert testimony to say the failure to act is below the standard of care. We don't need expert testimony to say I contracted for him to perform.
That's what I said.
He failed to perform, but there was no breach of any standard of care.
I understand. You're saying that the doctor recognizes he has sepsis. He doesn't treat it. I agreed to treat the sepsis. I don't need expert testimony at trial because all I did was I agreed to do something. I didn't do it. I breached my contract. No standard of care necessary because that's related to negligence.
That's not the argument I'm making, Your Honor.
Okay. Tell me what you're making. I'm missing it.
Your Honor, in this case, she contracted for a bilateral breast augmentation. He didn't give her two at the end of care. And there, if the jury says there's no negligence, then he wasn't negligent. That's the law of the case. But he still didn't do what he said he would do. And I still go back. You know, maybe it's a negligence case when you start throwing sepsis in. But if you just simply say, there's a mole on my cheek, he just decided not to do it, there's no negligence there. And this is a cosmetic procedure, much like a mole removal surgery would be a cosmetic procedure. So, you know, it's something you go in to choose to do or choose not to do. He contracted to do it, and he failed to refuse, not in any negligence. It was a good decision to not remove the mole. And that falls under the definition of healthcare liability claims. So I think you have to interpret that statutory definition to include everything.
So in this case, you're complaining that she paid him and she wants her money back.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because she only has one.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's not damage we can get because it was the fact that she paid for the surgery is not proximately. It's not a damage she has as a proximate result of any negligence. She paid it before, so it's not an element of damage in a negligence claim. Thank you,
Your Honor. I have one more question before you leave, and I know your time's up, and I'm sorry to be so late, but I'm just thinking this through. In terms of the failure to remove a mole from your cheek, the facts of this case seem to bring forward the question of a warning that was supposed to be given according to a mandate that was pronounced in January of 2007 as to the contents of a warning relating to smoking. And that was it appears under the facts of the case that that warning was never given. Through the times of contacts with the doctor and his office all the way through November of 2007. So from January to November, there was this requirement out there that if Dr. Kasdan contracted to do things correctly that he didn't do, which is not an election to fail to remove a mole or to fail to complete the augmentation of both breasts, but rather a failure to comply with a warning or consent form requirement that he just didn't do. That's part of her, I wouldn't have done this operation and continue to smoke where I was exposing myself to get infections after the operation. I wouldn't have done that. Either I would have not had the operation or I would have quit smoking. So isn't that a combination of both a failure to comply with a standard of care and a failure to perform fully on the contract?
Justice Meyer, I think it could be, but you pointed out in the pleading the last time, you said properly, appropriately, properly. So I put in three additional allegations that didn't address reasonableness or propriety.
I think you were very rational and reasonable in doing that, in following what I was suggesting. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Your case is submitted.